Hi, everyone, live and local. It's a Juno afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host on this Friday afternoon here, and we've got a great show for you today. We're going to be talking to Natalie Watson here, who's going to be highlighting the Girls on the Run. Colette Costa will be here to talk about something inconceivable. Yes, Princess Bride extravaganza happening at Gold Town Theater this weekend. And then we'll also be getting the details of this weekend's Douglas Volunteer Firefighters Wildlife Cruise. That's all coming up, plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, lots of music, lots of fun. All that and more, right ahead. That's all coming up on a Juno afternoon right after National Native News. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal leaders, health advocates, and national Native organizations are among those closely watching the country's fight over health care. U.S. senators on both sides say the fight over the Affordable Care Act is not over, as Republican efforts to pass a slimmed-down Obamacare repeal narrowly failed this week. Tribes are concerned a repeal to the current health reform law would have devastating cuts to Indian country. Democratic senators Thursday offered an amendment to exempt the Indian Health Service, tribal health care facilities, and urban health providers from Medicaid cuts if the repeal was successful. More than 200,000 American Indians and Alaska Natives are said to benefit from Medicaid expansion. Some college research students are examining how to remove chemicals and water on the Navajo Nation. One of the research students says, now more than ever, Native scientists are needed to make sure environmental issues don't get swept under the rug or forgotten. Rachel Kramer reports.
Jay Johnson, a member of Navajo Nation, is an undergraduate chemistry student at San Diego State University. This summer, she's doing research at the University of Montana with a doctoral student who's developing a filter to remove uranium and arsenic from wells on the Navajo Reservation. Between 1944 and 1986, mining companies extracted nearly 30 million tons of uranium out of Navajo land to make atomic weapons. At the end of the Cold War, uranium prices dropped, and the companies left behind more than 500 mines. Many people living near the mines have died of kidney failure and cancer, and research from the CDC shows uranium in babies born now. Federal agencies and Navajo Nation have been working together to clean up some of the abandoned mines.
But if there's even less money going into environmental concerns in the future, then I feel like it could be easily kind of dropped or not completed or forgotten unless Native people themselves actually worked on it themselves and found their money their own way without having to depend on a federal government.
A coalition recently requested the Trump administration lift a 20-year ban on mining near the Grand Canyon,
which is actually where my family lives. So I do have some concern to continue thinking about water remediation research in my future because it's literally so close to home, and I just want to make sure that I could do my part.
Johnson and doctoral student Ronaldo Sosi recently returned from the reservation with water samples to test the filter. I'm Rachel Kramer in Missoula, Montana.
Four Bands Community Fund has received grants to establish a business center on the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation in South Dakota. As Jim Kent reports, the 5,000-square-foot building will create a central location for economic development opportunities for small businesses owned by tribal members.
The two grants totaling $670,000 that Four Bands received are from Project Reinvest and the South Dakota Governor's Office of Economic Development. Four Bands Community Fund's mission is to build strong and sustainable small businesses and increase their capability to enter the financial mainstream. Lakota Vogel is the group's executive director. She says the nonprofit serves Native American entrepreneurs on the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation and across South Dakota.
One of the biggest points of feedback from them is it's very difficult to find land in order to start their business and try it out. So we, after 17 years, have decided to provide that, you know, physical space for our startup businesses and coach them through the process.
Vogel says Four Bands already has entrepreneurs in mind to occupy the 5,000-square-foot business center. Possible businesses include a restaurant, art dealers, a health food store, and a dry cleaners. Conceptual plans for the project are expected to be complete by year's end, with spring 2018 as the goal to start construction. I'm Jim Kent.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
And by Humboldt State University, we know what it means to be rooted in community. You can get your Master's of Social Work and amplify your voice without having to leave it. The part-time online program accepts applications between August 1st and 31st. More at humboldt.edu/socialwork. Support by BNSF Railway, proud partners of the American Indian Science and Education Society's National Conference, September 21st to 23rd, helping prepare the next generation of STEM leaders. More at bnsf.com/tribal relations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Support comes from GCI, with up-to-date information on maintenance, community events, products, and more on social media. GCI on Facebook at facebook.com/GCIAK.
Some people say that if you remember the 60s, you weren't there. Well, whether you remember them or not, put a flower in your hair and climb aboard the KRNN Time Machine for a trip down memory lane as we celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Summer of Love. It's guaranteed to stir your memories if you were there, and if you weren't there, it'll give you a hint what it was all about. Celebrate the Summer of Love on KRNN 102.7 FM.
Oh, Band on the Run there. Well, let's talk about Girls on the Run that's coming up. And Boys, too, right?
That's
with
right.
Natalie Watson is here, one of the organizers for it. Natalie, what's your position?
I am the local Girls on the Run coordinator and the local Boys Run coordinator.
Yeah, so this is a really cool part of it. There's Girls on the Run that's been happening. We're just kind of counting it up. It's been 9 years that it's been going, since 2008.
Yeah.
And then the Boys Run started just a couple years ago, and that's a great addition because the whole thing is all about youth kind of taking care of themselves, all that kind of stuff, right?
That's right. The lessons have a lot in common in that they're social and emotional learning programs, they're empowerment programs, they strengthen your body, mind, and spirit, and then at the end they all run a 5K together to celebrate their accomplishment.
Yeah, that's cool. So let's talk a little bit about one thing we're going to get to is we want to talk about there's lots of ways to get involved in the Girls on the Run and Boys Run as well, and one of them is to be coaches. So we want to talk about what people might consider being a coach and, if you've got the energy and time and the interest to do that. But let's talk about the program itself. What all does it cover? It's more than just the run, right?
Absolutely.
There's all these kind of really cool things that happen associated with it.
That's right, yeah. So it's a mentorship program where these adults are mentoring kids and being good role models for them. And each lesson has a different topic, and there's lots of stuff about, you know, nourishing your physical and emotional and spiritual health and leading with an open heart, standing up for yourself and others. And there's a community impact project in both programs kind of towards the end of it. And the whole time they're training to run a 5K, which is so good for their confidence.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just ways of ways of being a good and responsible citizen of the world.
That's right.
Right? I mean,
yeah,
first
absolutely.
And foremost. But then it's also ways that I think it kind of started with the idea of ways that women in particularly can develop skills to keep themselves out of situations, you know, to be able to deal with things as they come along.
Right.
And then, of course, it also logically follows that young boys should know these things as well, and they need to know their role in these things as well. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, boys grow up in this kind of culture of toxic masculinity, so it's so important to help them, you know, learn to listen to their own intuition rather than just following their peers.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh. Exactly right. And, I mean, that's hard to do. There's so much of the, I mean, it's a cliche term, peer pressure, but there's so much pressure to be like the others.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? And go
it's
along.
Totally pervasive.
Yeah, yeah. So what are some of the tools what are some of the things that are taught and talked about a little bit differently between the boys and the girls?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, with girls, we're really just teaching them empowerment. You know, that's what girls need more than anything, empowerment. With boys, it's a little more like how to get along with a group, you know, how to resolve conflict. And, you know, giving back to your community is a huge part of it. Teamwork is a huge part of it. And healthy communication. So all these things that boys don't really learn anywhere else.
All those things have to do so much with the concept of empathy.
That's right,
and sort of like being able to understand another person's position.
Yeah. And one really special thing about Boys Run, is that the full name is actually Boys Run Ituu Klatsin, which is Tlingit for Strengthen Your Spirit. It's that we integrate local culture and respect and traditional values into the program so that boys are learning to respect each other, you know, respect each other's cultures.
Well, that's a really – so it goes – of course goes into the interactions that boys have with girls and men have with women, but also that boys have with each other,
Absolutely.
Women have with each other, mm-hmm. all those kind of relationships that develop so that you develop these skills that allow you to be responsible and allow you to be helpful and productive.
Absolutely.
And, yeah,
uh-huh.
all those things, yeah.
And by the end of it, you can see a real change in the kids. It's really pretty interesting.
Yeah. So a big part of this, of course, is getting people that are really motivated to be coaches.
That's right. So we always need coaches. And coaches do not have to be runners. A lot of people don't know that. But you just have to be a positive role model and have the time. So you need to have a couple afternoons a week free. And you just have to be passionate about empowering kids. So we're looking for men and women of all ages.
So the run's in the beginning of December, so it's a couple of month pro, or how does
That's
that
right.
work? Yeah.
Right. So the coach training for Girls on the Run will be August 26th and for Boys Run September 9th, and then we start the program September 18th. And then December 2nd is the big 5K for both programs altogether.
Yeah, and what is the time commitment? What happens with the boys and girls through those couple of months, September to December? It is a couple of times a week they're doing
right.
different things?
Right. So some teams meet Monday, Wednesday. Some meet Tuesday, Thursday. And there's 20 lessons total. And they're all done by December 2nd.
Yeah, cool. And are there some, like what are some of the things out there, skills or things like that, that people might not necessarily think about that might make them have a particular interest
cool.
in being a coach?
Being a good coach. Anybody who's had experience like with a group of kids, that experience is so valuable. We're always looking for that. But also you get one-on-one time with kids. So it's just you just really have to have the passion for it, and everybody has some kind of talent that
yeah.
they can offer.
How many coaches do you need in total?
Well, we have 5 Girls on the Run teams, 2 Boys Run teams, and we'd like 3 coaches on each team.
So 20-some people.
Yeah, so roughly, yeah, we can never have enough. And then we also always need substitute coaches. So even if you don't have lots of time available, it would be great to get your help. And also you can volunteer at the 5K. We always need volunteers.
Yeah, at the actual run itself.
That's right.
And what is the route of the run generally? Where does it kind of go?
Well, in the wintertime, we run at the field house.
Oh, you do it in the field house.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Sorry. Wasn't thinking. December. Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Well, Sitka ran outside, so maybe we could, too.
I mean, depending on the weather, the weather's been kooky lately, and so maybe it's just going to be – maybe we'll have July in December,
that's
since we
right.
haven't had July.
That's right. That would only
in
be
July. Yeah, right. Well, great. So so how can people get involved? How do they get
yeah.
a hold of you, and how do they get involved? And
so Girls on the Run is so established. They have a great website. It's GOTRGreateralaska.org, so you can sign up your daughter or sign up to coach there. Boys Run, we're still kind of starting up the website part, but you can always ask your school counselor. So we'll have Boys Run at Harborview and Montessori this semester. So you can ask your counselor, or you can just contact us at AWARE. And you can contact me. My name is Natalie, and my email is nataliew@awareak.org. And my phone number is 586-4902. So...
yeah, and you mentioned very briefly there signing up kids as well who want to get involved.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So what sort of kids? I mean, how would people kind of determine? Oh, that's going to be really
yeah.
perfect for my kid.
Absolutely. So Boys Run and Girls on the Run, we do 3rd to 5th grade in the elementary schools, and Girls on the Run actually has a middle school program. So we'll have a Heart and Soul. It's called at Santikihini this season. And boys' run is just for third to fifth grade boys so far.
Yeah, right. So that's the age groups that you're talking about. All right. Well, it's girls on the run and boys run too as well. And it's the race itself is happening December, but the volunteer opportunities start, sounds like, in September is when the classes start, but the training for the coaches starts a little bit earlier.
Right. So August 26th was for the girls on the run.
Yeah.
Training,
right.
Yep. And it's a super fun training, and you get to meet lots of great people. It's really good skills that
are
taught there.
And do great work and really teach our young people how to be really great citizens.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, Natalie, thanks so much for coming in and letting us know about it.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank
have me. A yeah, and come back closer to the run and we'll hear
we
more about
indeed.
The run itself.
All right.
Okay, sounds good.
My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
I mean, it's funny just to listen
just
to.
Just listening to it.
It's Princess Bride. Clint Costa's with us. And Princess, yeah.
That was the movie that really turned me on to Mandy Patinkin. And
sure.
I only went to see that movie when it came out. To see Wallace Shawn, because that's how much of a theater nerd I was. And I was just watching a behind-the-scenes making of Princess Bride thing, they're talking about the casting of it, you know, and how incredibly lucky they got with Cary Elwes and with Robin Wright, who was doing she was in Santa Barbara, the soap opera. That's all she had been doing.
Yeah, right.
And they found her, and they were like, we want you. But he was talking about casting... Christopher Guest, and of course, you know, they had done Spinal Tap together,
yeah.
And he said, Robert said, I have this basic theory that any time I make a movie, I want Christopher Guest to be in it.
That's a basic theory.
And apparently, he kind of gave him this choice of roles, and that's the one he wanted was Rude, which I think is such a great role for
man.
Him.
Yes, it is. It's great.
Oh,
he plays evil, you know, evil so well, right? He's so evil.
It's such a... Anyway, I've been so nerding out on that movie. I've probably watched it more times in the last week than I've watched it in the last 30 years.
I'm in it only for Peter Falk. That's me. It's just Peter Falk.
Yeah.
That's all I want.
He said that...
And Fred Savage, I don't think, had done the Wonder Years yet
no,
either, right?
Pre,
that was his first
pre-Wonder
thing.
Years.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, all these... You know, yeah. These people that you kind of think, oh, well, of course they'd be in it. Actually, this is the first time they were in anything. A lot of
and
these
when,
folks,
when
yeah.
William Goldman was writing the screenplay to it, he said he wrote Fezzik for Andre the Giant.
Yeah.
And he told Rob Reiner, he's like, I don't know what else you're thinking. There's no one else in the world
who can play
who can or should play Fezzik.
Yeah.
And Rob Reiner was like, well, yeah, duh.
Right.
it's a great little behind the scenes thing on just all these great little insights. And,
that's cool.
And there's actually a scene with Mandy Patinkin talking about he made that movie just a couple of years after his father had died of cancer. He was really close with his father, and of course I think everyone is really affected by that role, not just that line.
Sure, yeah.
And he said the entire time he was making that and doing that those parts, especially with Rugen, his father died of cancer, and he could never sort of bring himself to really deal with it and accept it. And he said at some point he realized that every time he was practicing that, it's like he was talking to the cancer.
Oh.
And he's like, and when he said when we did that take, it was in one take. He said we actually kills him. And he said I did that and I felt like I had freed my father.
Wow.
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's really amazing. So this is like a documentary that, are you going to play that?
No,
this weekend,
just watch it on YouTube.
Oh, okay. Yeah, just see it on YouTube, people.
Just
so
watch
easy.
The whole
yeah.
thing.
But what is
it? Don't try to watch the whole thing because you end up on a porn site. So.
Tell me.
FYI. Which Jay's will do.
Just with the internet.
Different kind of bride.
But.
Different kind of princess.
But, so what all is happening surrounding Princess Bride at Gold Town?
It is the 30th anniversary of the Princess Bride.
Right.
Hard to believe we are that old.
Yeah.
And
not hard
this,
for me to believe.
No,
I am that old.
You are that
yeah,
old. And
just,
you got a couple of miles around the block.
Oh,
on me.
Man, yeah. Oh, yeah, I do.
I don't think that many. Anyway, the point being, let's not be old people talking about how old we are, Andy.
Remember, when?
So this was part of our, I'm including this as part of our Cinema Classic Collective, which is a thing I started earlier this year. I really wanted to showcase classic films, and I decided when I realized it was the 30th anniversary that I was going to, every year I'm going to include one quote-unquote modern classic, which is a classic that is at least 25 years old, which is frightening to think that includes movies from the 80s.
Yeah.
But it is. There are certain movies that I hate the term instant classic, but certain things just qualify.
Sure.
And this was certainly one of them. And also, you know, we have this membership club, the MGM Membership Club, which is essential, as you know, here at Public Radio, to keeping the doors open. Membership is a very important part of it. This is something I also started exactly a year ago, and it's helped enormously, and I'm very appreciative of everything that people have done to help do that.
Well,
and
it's also a great deal. It's a great fun thing for people to do. They get to be a member.
Stuff.
They're in.
Well,
get stuff. You get you know, first notices of things going on. You're informed. Yeah.
Here's great. The crazy thing. So I have a couple of upper-level memberships that very few people have, but one of the perks of the upper-level membership is you get to choose and program a movie of your choice. And this was one of my upper member level choices. He wanted to
Princess Bride. I love it. I love
and
this guy.
I know.
Yeah.
He's a heck of a guy.
That's great.
And so he chose it, and I thought, well, shoot, do you mind if I scoop this in and really run with it? And he's like, absolutely. So
yeah.
We just snowballed the whole thing and put it into the classic club, and which has been a great, because I would not have thought to include modern classics in my classic cinema club. So that worked out really well. It's just been awesome, and we also have it on 35mm, so that's kind of, it's nice to have Bessie fired up again.
Visually, what do you feel like is the difference between that and, like, really high-end digital?
It's a completely different thing. In fact, what I should do, I should try to schedule this in, try to do a side-by-side. I
that
can't
would
do side-by-side, but I can do one after the other.
Because it just, you know, when I'm watching a digital film, right, like we watch in Gold Town now almost always, it's like, this looks great, you know?
It does. It looks great. And there are going to be people, in both camps that, I mean, I'm always going to prefer 35mm because I'm a troglodyte. And and outside of that, it's not a great print. And we've had to swap it out once in a while, like, anyway.
Yeah, right.
But you can 100% tell that you are not watching a digital print.
Yeah.
But the difference is
it's marked.
Yeah.
Honestly. And yeah. not to say it's better or worse.
It's
a lot of people
richer,
would probably...
It's, I mean, it's like vinyl versus digital kind of argument, sort of?
It's like a photograph versus a digital thing, really. It's some people are going to not prefer the 35 millimeter, honestly. It doesn't... We've gotten used to seeing things very crisp and clean. I don't really prefer that look. I like a movie to look like a movie. I don't want to feel like I'm in a production studio looking at a play, you know?
Right. It's fun to think about that difference, though. This is just as an added thing.
There's definitely a depth to it that's missing in digital.
Right.
And I'm tactile. I like that. I like that the film itself. I like having the machine running, you know, especially when there's the torture machine on. It's like, ah, machines.
Right.
So we got this in, and here's a little side story, adjunct. One of our favorite volunteers at the theater, Dr. Amy, props. She was a childhood pen pal of William Goldman.
Really?
And they had they exchanged letters for years. And he had in an interview, he had said something like, hey, if you think you have a better ending for this story, let me know. And she wrote him, and she's like, well, I have a couple of them. And they had a correspondence for quite a long time.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That is really wild.
So we have a couple of special shows. We're having a 9 p.m. show tonight, which is going to be, and I'm warning you now, if you expect to sit and watch the movie quietly.
This is kind of the Rocky Horror kind of version, right? This is a participatory.
This is going to be the 9 p.m. quote-along shout-out.
Nice.
I don't know. I don't think Dr. Amy's in town right now, so because she would recite the entire film.
Yeah.
But if you want to shout-out and yell and scream,
a lot of lisping.
Can scream inconceivable every 30 seconds, come tonight at 9 o'clock,
very
please.
Good.
It's the only time I'm going to allow that.
Yeah.
Probably scream inconceivable whenever you want.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I've got two weekend matinees at 2 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. Our special... matinees for parents and kids, or guardians and kids, I don't care. I'm calling it the Restless Rugrats.
All right.
Showing. So
rodents of unusual size.
Rugrats of unusual size. Oh, and I think of that. Dang it. For parents whose kids can't sit still or make a lot of noise or who have babies or whatever, and you can come down, bring the loudest, squirmiest. I think in my email I said kids who are sitting, screaming, pooping their pants are generally acting like bluegrass musicians. This is the show for you.
Hard to tell the difference sometimes.
Believe you me.
Right.
When it's sitting on my chair, sleeping and peeing, I don't know.
They both can play banjo.
Is it Todd Grebe or is it a baby? Don't know.
Right.
But you can bring them down Saturday, Sunday, 2 p.m., make as much noise, no judgment. We're going to leave the lights halfway on in case I'm going to get scared.
Oh, nice, yeah.
Yeah, so it'll be a kind of a totally, again, if you want to see a quiet movie, don't come to those.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then what I'm super psyched about is it's something I've been wanting to start for a while. They do it down south, and I've been trying to steal this idea for a bit, and it is a live script read-along. So you have, of course, down south they use A-list stars to do this. So we are going to be doing a all-star Juno lineup of live actors doing a live script read of the movie. The movie will be playing behind them. We're not trying to lip sync. We're not trying to sync it up. It's just there is a visual cue and reference.
Right.
But we are going to have 12 or 13 live actors reading the script.
That sounds like a blast.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
We only have time, because I have 13 of them, we only have time to do one show. Tickets are going to be live online on our website on Sunday.
Okay.
I mean, tomorrow morning, Saturday. Obviously, we only have 75 seats. And our cast includes Shona Osterhout, Enrique Bravo, Frank Katass, Robin Davis, Elizabeth Peisel Davis, myself, Heather Laverne, Allison Holtkamp.
Wow.
Tom Robinault. I'm forgetting someone.
I mean, that's everyone.
That's pretty much
like,
nearly everyone.
Like everyone who's ever acted in Juno is going to be in there. Yeah.
So
Aaron Elmore, did you get Aaron Elmore?
He had to go out of town Sunday.
All right. But anyway, that's the only other person I could think of who, yeah.
But what I also want to do, I suspect the tickets are probably going to go fast. What I would like to do is remount this whole thing on September 24th, which is the actual drop date of the 30th anniversary of the film. So if this goes over well, we'll
do it again.
A reprisal?
Sure.
Whenever, fancy word. In September.
All right.
I'm really psyched about that. We've had a little practice. I've been hammering away at the script for, you know, you get the script and it's got all the cues. You've got to keep some of the cues.
Do you got any room left for a couple of ROUSs? Maybe me and Lou can get in there or something?
Every time I mention this.
Burst into flames.
Yeah, do you have any idea how many times I've been told that Lou has to be in the show?
I know. I know.
And well, do you know how
he does?
Do you know how bad I feel that I'm playing Vizzini?
Oh, man.
Sorry, Lou.
Not bad at all.
Not at all.
No. All right, so that's happening. The dates and the tickets one more time.
Princess Bride is playing all this week at 7 p.m. It's got late shows Friday and Saturday at 9 p.m. It's got afternoon matinees Saturday and Sunday at 4:30 p.m. Restless Rugrats is 2 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. It's also playing one final movie only time Tuesday at 7. I mean, Tuesday at 7. Is that the second? What day is that?
I don't have it in front of me.
I don't know.
Maybe.
It's Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yeah. Then the 2nd of August, which is Wednesday.
Okay.
Is the live script read-along.
Should we go through this again?
I got this. The live script read-along
is on next Wednesday.
Yes.
Whatever date that is.
Whatever
it's next
date that
Wednesday.
7:30 p.m. And
backing up from there, Tuesday, what's happening?
Tuesday is just the regular movie.
Regular movie.
Not playing Monday because we have to practice.
Sunday.
We're going to actually practice this.
Sunday, what's happening?
Sunday, 2 p.m., 4:30 p.m., 7 p.m., and a special 9 p.m. Sunday show for summer people.
Nice, yeah.
They work all night.
They work, man.
Why not? I mean, I'm going to be up at 7. I'll be up till 3 a.m. on Sunday anyway, just
right.
Fretting and wringing my hands.
That's right.
Lord.
Now, you also, in the midst of all this Princess Bride craziness,
Nancy.
You, of course, are also a wonderful musician, as we all know, and you've got a couple, you got a gig happening. Is that happening tonight or tomorrow night?
It's tomorrow night, and I'm psyched about it. And can I just clarify, as long as everyone in town is listening right now, as I know they are, once and for all, it is not my band. It is our band. It is it's the people's band. Stop it. So
the people kind of decide whose band it is.
Our band. Well, the people aren't.
Yeah. Now
the people pay my salary. Think about that.
That's right.
Our band, Gamble and the High Cost of Living, is playing a very special gig Saturday at 8 p.m. at Rainy Retreat Books. Which is one of two of my favorite bookstores in town.
And it's a great venue for a big 10-piece band.
You know, we need a 10-piece band in a place the size of my Jeep.
Full of books.
Full of books. Yeah. So,
great acoustics, though. Really baffling. Nice.
Yeah. So that was recently bought by some nice people here in town, one of whom plays my band. Alexi plays bass in our band.
Very cool, yeah.
And they bought into that little business, and he thinks he's going to do a ton of book sales during the gig. So I'm telling you right now, don't walk in there and listen to this band unless you're buying a book. Because I will be watching, and I'm going to have a microphone.
Buy a book.
I don't care what you buy.
The plus side is the books are cheap. I mean, they're used
awesome.
Books, and they're awesome, yeah, but you can find a cheap. If you're just in there to listen to the band, get a cheap book.
Just get, but I don't care, buy a bookmark.
Cents, something, yeah, but, right, buy a bookmark.
Yeah, you know what, this is valuable real estate, people, like I used to say at the diner, you don't sit here and read the paper, you eat your breakfast and you go. You go read the paper at home, that's what the bathroom is for. Come in, buy a book, don't quibble about the price, my God, it's written in pencil, all right?
There's
don't
a band playing, go
believe
talk,
me,
you don't have
I've,
to talk to buy a book.
No.
There's a band playing.
Also, do you know how many times people talk to you when you're playing in a band? They don't care.
I know.
Yeah, jibber jabber
it.
All day long.
I've done it. It's terrible.
You have done it.
I've done it.
So, 8 p.m. Saturday, and quite frankly, I mean, we're just going to shut the road down. Don't try to drive down Seward on Saturday after 8 p.m. Forget it. Or, I mean, I'm going to see if the dancing girls will come out.
Yeah, there's no way you can't. You're just going to have the doors open.
I think, you know, we do. We bring sledgehammers. We bust a hole through to the rookery.
There you
call
go.
It a day.
There you go.
Done.
Now you got the room for the band.
Boom.
Yeah.
Put the band on the street. Let everyone dance inside.
All
what if
it.
The band was just lined up on Seward Street?
These are all great ideas.
Many ideas. So little money.
I think that what you're going to have to just go with playing at Rainy Day Books.
Fine.
Yeah. That's what's going
to
happen.
Let's go back to A.
Is it Rainy Day Books or Rainy Retreat Books?
Rainy Retreat. You can't say Rainy Day Books. You'll get sued.
I think I just cost the station a lot of money. Rainy Retreat Books is where you're going to be playing. That's tomorrow night?
Yeah.
What time?
8 p.m.-ish. Until, you know, we got to get our...
And just free admission, but come in and get a book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes we do things just because they're fun, because we like this community. Not everything has to be tied to a price tag, people. Ring-a-ding-ding.
That's
on that
weird
one.
To hear you say that. It's really weird.
Thanks.
All right. So Princess Bride happening.
When do I get my paycheck for this interview?
Yeah, it'll be in
it'll
there.
Be in the
right?
mail.
It's in the green room.
Right.
Yeah. It's all in the green room.
There's a green room?
Right by the punch bowl over there. Yeah.
Princess Bride this weekend. Super psyched. Come on down. You know, we had a family come in last night with four kids who had none of the kids had ever seen it. It was so awesome. And they were guffawing.
Yeah. They'd never seen it. Isn't that amazing that people haven't seen this movie?
And I'm not even lying to you. I heard the kids say, they were down there, and the grandfather starts doing like the kissing scene, and I heard, and there was two boys and a girl, and I heard this boy go, oh!
Yeah, classic.
And just then Fred Savage is like, God, Grandpa! And they were like, yes!
Classic. All right. Princess Bride coming up. Colette, thanks so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
All right, all right.
The Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 28th of July, 2017. It's the birthday of the poet John Ashbery, born Rochester, New York, 1927, grew up on his family's fruit farm near Lake Ontario, went to a small rural school. He was a bright young man and a generous neighbor, seeing that, paid to send him to a good school for his last 2 years of high school, and he started writing poetry, went on to Harvard, published his first book when he was 29, a book entitled Some Trees. It's the birthday of the poet Gerard Manley Hopkins, born in Stratford near London, 1844, went to a fancy boarding school, wrote poems, he was a painter, went on to Oxford to study the classics, and while he was there, he had a religious conversion. His parents were Anglicans, but the young Hopkins decided to become a Catholic, inspired by John Henry Newman, whose book Apologia Pro Vita Sua was a bestseller while Hopkins was at Oxford. 2 years later, Hopkins decided to become a Jesuit priest, and he began his training. He burned all of his poems, said he was giving up poetry. Didn't write at all for 7 years, until 1875, when a German passenger ship, the SS Deutschland, sank in a storm. 75 passengers died, including 5 Franciscan nuns who were escaping harsh anti-Catholic laws. And he wrote a long poem, The Wreck of the Deutschland. And now that he saw poetry as a way to express his faith, he started writing again. In the year he was ordained as a priest, 1877, he wrote some of his best-known poems, including The Windhover, As Kingfishers Catch Fire, Dragonflies Draw Flame, and he wrote God's Grandeur, the famous poem that begins, The world is charged with the grandeur of God. He went through desperate hard times as a priest, was sent to Dublin, which he hated. He became very depressed, doubted his own religious faith, even contemplated suicide, died of typhoid fever at the age of 44. During his lifetime, he had published only a handful of poems. Here's a poem for today by Lewis Jenkins, My Ancestral Home. We came to a beautiful little farm. From photos I'd seen, I knew this was the place. The house and barn were painted in the traditional Falu red, trimmed with white. It was nearly midsummer, the trees and grass lush green. When we arrived, the family was gathered at a table on the lawn for coffee and fresh strawberries. Introductions were made all around. Grandpa Sven, Lars Olaf and Marie, Eric and Gudrun, cousin Inga and her two children. It made me think of a Carl Larsen painting. But of course it was all modern. The Swedes are very up-to-date. Lars Olaf was an engineer for Volvo, and they all spoke perfect English, except for Grandpa, and there was a great deal of laughter over my attempts at Swedish. We stayed for a long time, laughing and talking. It was late in the day, but the sun was still high. I felt a wonderful kinship. It seemed to me that I had known these people all my life. They even looked like family back in the States. But as it turned out, we had come to the wrong farm. Lars Olaf said, "I think I know your people. They live about 3 miles from here. If you like, I could give them a call." I said that no, it wasn't necessary. This was close enough. My Ancestral Home, a poem by Lewis Jenkins, from European Shoes, published by Will-o'-the-Wisp Books, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
I'm a real wild one.
Wild one.
Wild one.
Wild one. Wild one. Wild one.
Let's talk about a wildlife cruise coming up. It's the Juneau Volunteer, Douglas Volunteer Firefighters Wildlife Cruise that's coming up, and Meg Thordeson and Chad Cameron are here with me. You're both with the fire department. Thanks for coming in, you guys. And Meg, let's start off. First off, there's not a lot of room left on the wildlife cruise, right?
There's 9 tickets left. We'd love to have people come, buy those tickets out, make it a full boat. It leaves Stater Harbor at 3:00. And gets back at 6:00. We have appetizers on board, and then there's beverages for purchase. Tickets are $75 for adults and $30 for kids.
And it's this really cool route that leaves out. It's an Almarine boat, right?
Almarine.
So it's one of the catamarans in it. And by the way, the water's supposed to be very nice and calm tomorrow. The weather's not supposed to be too bad, right?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be just kind of scattered showers, but nice scattered. To me, scattered showers mean scattered sun. Right?
Right.
Liquid sunshine.
But the water's supposed to be nice tomorrow, which is the key.
Nice.
Yeah. And so it's a really fun route, right? It kind of goes out north and...
It goes out north there and quite a ways. And we saw a lot of whales last year, a lot of bubble feeding. And then there's also some photo opportunities with Sparky the fire dog at the beginning of the cruise.
Oh, okay.
So for those
bonus.
Folks, yes. Yes, Sparky will be there. And then
one of the coveted volunteer positions at the fire department to be Sparky, right? Yes. Got to fit into the suit, though, right?
Right.
That's the key. And, well, that's really cool. And, Chad, you're also with the fire department. We were just talking about opportunities for people to be able to actually maybe fulfill a dream and kind of be engaged with becoming a volunteer fireman.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We're always looking for volunteers. With our city, our community takes volunteer and career personnel to accommodate all the emergencies we have in town here. We offer training to anybody interested, need to have a clean record and a strong interest to serve their community, and we'd be more than happy to train them. We teach internationally certified Firefighter 1. Sometimes Firefighter 2 in town. We also teach people up to the EMT 1-2 level in town. So we're willing to train you.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I mean, I always think, I'm always a little intimidated by the idea of like, wow, it's always interested me a little bit, right? But I've always thought, oh, well, I don't know, I'm not in great shape right now or, you know, that kind of thing. But it sounds like maybe there's kind of room for lots of different skills. And
There are. And everyone
there
has
is,
their
yeah.
specialties. Some people like doing rope rescue and water rescue. Sounds like you may have an interest.
Yeah.
Be more than happy to have your application.
All right. All right. Yeah. And how did you get involved in the firefighting? Yeah.
My daughter was graduating, and I needed something to do, and I was always interested in joining the fire department, but time was never right, and then time became right, and I've been with them almost 9 years now, 8 years.
Wow, yeah. And in what kind of capacities have you kind of volunteered for them?
Firefighter 1.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, Firefighter 2, and then EMT 1. So.
And is that all stuff that you came in? Did you have some prior? Nothing.
Nope,
it
nothing.
All trained up there as a volunteer. Yeah.
Yep.
Do you have something that now that you've done it for 9 years, you really you know, you love one particular thing in particular or something that you really gravitate towards?
I like the EMS and I like the scene support stuff.
Okay.
And, just learning to get checked off on the fire engine. So
Yeah.
More skills every year.
Now, what does scene support kind of mean? What is that?
That's helping getting ladders up to the building, getting the tools ready, getting lighting to the scene.
It's basically a non-entry firefighter.
Yeah.
People that assist outside but don't go inside the buildings.
Yeah.
And so what is the course of training happen? Someone like me were to come in and say, okay, I'm ready to go, to the point where I would be someone who was like, for instance, an entry firefighter. How much time and effort and that kind of thing does that take?
Well, it's significant time to be able to become entry qualified. What you do is once you submit an application, you can ask us questions at the office or any firefighter. Once you submit your application, we do a background check, and we ask you to do some of that initial stuff. We'll take a look at your application and bring you in for an interview. Once you become a member, we have a couple introductory classes, and then we just plug you in. We have Firefighter 1, that's the basic level, entry-level firefighter training going on all the time, and we kind of spread that out through the year so no one's inundated all the time, but just kind of like 2 weeks on, you do 2 days a week, and then you have 2 weeks off. You go to drills and such, and that's how you become entry-level firefighter. And then we say, hey, we've got EMT this time. Do you want to become an EMT? You don't have to. But there are certain levels like first aid and the scene support, which we train people through drills on how to do those things, throw a ladder, drag hose.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, it's stuff that obviously when you think about it, well, you could probably learn how to drag hose, you know, but it's so needed. And it needs someone who knows the basic rules, knows what's going to be good and bad and how to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. Really kind of interesting to think about all the different levels of how you can volunteer for an organization like a fire department.
We really like to, people have specialties, and we really want to capitalize on those.
And you were saying earlier that there's a real need and sort of almost a mystery that's happening, but the call level has just really gone up.
It has. In the last 2 years, we've seen a significant increase in call volume. I would say right about the last 2 years, it's right about 40%.
40% increase?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
And just all different levels of things and no real kind of baseline cause that's been detected, but it's just there.
Yes. All of our different types of calls have went up. Fires have went up. Fire alarms are the only thing that went down, but emergency medical calls, our service calls have all increased. December, I always say this, December 30th, 2015, our fire department had 4,000 calls for the first time in a year. And this year, we're anticipating going over 5,300 calls.
So that's a significant increase and really requires a lot more participation from volunteers and building out that manpower.
Absolutely. Yeah. As I shared with you earlier, our community needs both volunteers and career firefighters to accommodate all the emergencies we have.
Yeah. What's your favorite kind of part of the job? Do you just get to go out on calls? I know you're working there and that kind of thing, but do you do that as well?
I do go on calls. My job, I'm incident commander of a lot of calls, and actually my favorite is all of them.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is you have the ability to serve your citizens and community, and I've always said Juneau, I enjoy the people of Juneau. It's a very friendly community. But if you're at a fire department in the Seattle area, for instance, you are a firefighter, and that's what you're going to do is just fire. You don't do EMS. You don't do anything else. You don't do rope rescue. Whereas Juneau, because we're a smaller community, but we have such a need, a person can do it all and be a part of everything. You can do a little bit of rope rescue. You can do a little bit of water rescue, fire, EMS, and so forth.
Yeah. Do you get common calls at the fire department that you wish people knew there's another place they should call for that thing?
You know, we're kind of the catch-all.
I'm kind of wondering, like bears or something. Like, do you get calls for bears, or do people already know? No, they call the police, or they call another agency.
Our dispatchers do a great job with sorting those calls through.
Right.
And we don't We sometimes receive calls in-house, but for the most part, everyone calls the dispatch center.
It's kind of channeled out by the dispatcher, and that's how it's done. Okay, yeah. I don't quite know how that worked. All right, so the Wildlife Cruise, one more time. Let's make sure people know how to get the tickets and all that stuff.
Okay, the Wildlife Cruise is Saturday, July 29th. You can call 907-723-7787 for tickets. That's my number. And we can get the tickets to you, or you can just meet us at the dock.
Can you send the engine out to their house with the tickets? Is that something you could? I don't know.
Probably not.
Not a good use of our municipal resources.
And it's a fundraiser. We did the fundraiser last year. We sent four people to the state fire conference, and we're hoping to send six people, if not a few more, this year to state fire conference, which is in Sitka this year.
And at that conference, what sort of happens at that conference, and what's the value of that for the
training,
firefighters?
More training. National people come and train, and it's just a great way to network and practice your skills with other people throughout the state.
Just keep up on best practices and new developments and those sorts of things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's the Wildlife Cruise. It's for the Douglas Volunteer Firefighters. And Chad and Meg, thanks so much for coming in. Let us know about it.
Thank you.
All right. Coming up right now, here's Bird Note.
This is Bird Note.
Summertime.
It's just a few weeks past the solstice, and the real heat of summer is yet to come. Some shorebirds are already on their way south, but most songbirds will be here for a while longer. What's the best time of day to look for them? Well, many birds are most active in the morning, not long after sunrise, taking advantage of the abundance of insects at that hour. As summer waxes and temperatures rise, midday heat sends people inside, and birds take a siesta too. And then, both birds and bugs rev up again in the late afternoon. In the early morning, and again near dusk, just about the time mosquitoes are biting, that's when birds are busiest. One exception is gulls. You'll see them soaring and feeding throughout the day, because their preferred foods, whether a salmon fry or a French fry, are available all day long. Hummingbirds are out and about, too, because their frantic metabolism requires that they feed almost constantly. But mostly, midday is a quiet time for birds. Are you looking for birds this summer? The cooler parts of the day are the best for a stroll and best for watching birds.
Hi, I'm Jamie, one of the co-hosts of the show Bridge from Nowhere. It's a show where we talk about our lives in Alaska. We talk about poop.
You'd be surprised what people send down the toilet.
We talk about adventure. We talk about Star Wars. We talk about monkeys.
People just thought it was some sort of released zoo ape.
So tune in this Sunday at 8 p.m. on KTOO 104.3 here in Juneau.
Thank you.
The USS Resaca sailed in southeast Alaskan waters in late 1867 and early 1868. The vessel arrived in Sitka in time to observe the official ceremony at which the Russian flag was lowered and the U.S. flag was raised. Although the Resaca was in Tlingit territory, when the surgeon of the Resaca, a man named George Cook, sailed south, he brought with him a puffin-skin parka made by either an Aleutic or Unangan woman. This parka is now on exhibit at the Alaska State Museum. Ellen Carley, conservator at the museum, explains why it is difficult to determine the origin of this garment.
From the materials that are in this parka, it's hard to say whether it would be an Unangan, what used to be called Aleut, or a Sukpiak Aleutic, because a lot of those species are in both areas, and I think some of the peoples who could make these parkas were in both areas.
Brown feathered pelts of puffins make up most of the garment, but the hems include seal fur and intricately embellished strips, likely made of gut or esophagus, painted blue with red, white, and yellow rectangles sewn together with a zigzag stitch. Susie Malutin is an Aleutic skin sewer in Kodiak. Here she describes the method for making such embellishments.
They made strips of de-haired caribou about a quarter inch, and then from there they wrapped it in caribou hair. And then they would use the wool from the soldier's uniform. It might be a green or it might be a blue. And they may have dyed some of that. And then they would wrap that around. And then they would go back to caribou hair. And so that would all be on this quarter strip. Then from there, they would embroidery with caribou hair decorative designs on that.
Puffin skin parkas were everyday wear for Aleutic people, but only worn by Unangan men. That is, until Russian explorers demanded that the Unangan and Aleutic surrender all otter pelts to them. Otter parkas were no longer permitted. Back in Kodiak, men who had not been dispatched to hunt sea otters for the Russian-American company were sent to puffin rookeries, where they were tasked with hunting the birds. The company then took the birds and distributed them to the women of Kodiak, who had to sew puffin skin parkas. Here, Susie Malutin describes how these parkas were sewn.
Well, one of the ways that I had learned is they would take and skin the bird, and then the women would suck the fat off. And then they would either soak them in urine or continue to wash them and dry them. And then utilize primarily the upper back portion where the feathers are bright and thick.
Once the parkas were made, they too were surrendered to the Russian-American company, which then distributed them as a form of payment to the sea otter hunters, the puffin hunters, and the parka sewers. This economic system that relied entirely on indigenous labor and indigenous goods characterized Russian America in the late 18th and early 19th centuries. However, this system shifted as time moved forward, and Aleutic and Unangan people began to be paid for their work in Russian currency, albeit not well. The USS Resaca left Alaska in January of 1868. On board was Princess Maria Alexandrovich Maksutov, the wife of the last governor of Russian America. Along with the highest-ranking woman in Russian America, the puffin-skin parka sailed south from Sitka, signaling a new era for Alaska and for the women who created this extraordinary garment. It is of these women that Malutin thinks of today when she sews.
Well, for me, it's the remembrance of what they survived with, what helped them survive, and what it took.
This is Angelie Grantham in Juneau.
And Angelie Grantham produces Alaska Out of the Vault as a cooperative project with Alaska State Museum. That's it for Juneau Afternoon for today. Thanks for listening, everyone. Remember, the Princess Bride is happening all this weekend at the Goldtown Theater. Looking for coaches for the Girls on the Run and Boys Run 2 there at AWARE, so contact AWARE if you're interested in volunteering. And also the Wildlife Cruise for Douglas Volunteer Firefighter happening, and you can check that out. There's only 9 tickets left, so act quickly if you want those tickets. This is KTO FM in Juneau. I'm Andy Klein. Thanks for listening to a Juneau Afternoon for this Friday. Have a great weekend, everyone.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.